Hello and welcome to a special barbecue edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. Years back, I decided to get good at cooking barbecue and formed a competitive team called Tasty Bites Barbecue. Along the way, we've cooked some good food, met some great people, and learned a ton. I decided to capture some of this spirit and knowledge in a two-part bonus episode for Underserved. This is the first part, where we will be getting to know all about three pitmasters. In the second part, we will reveal the tips, tricks, and secrets that these pitmasters use every day when they cook. So let's get down to business. Our first guest is Dave White, Director of Software Engineering at Iron Mountain. Dave and I have had the chance to work together on several software projects over the years. In our conversations, we realized we also share a love of barbecue. Dave cooks on the Pit Barrel Cooker, a drum-style smoker heralded for its great results, simplicity, and low cost. He likes to apply a technologist's attention to detail to get great results. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be here.
So I know you've been involved in technology for an awful long time. What was your progression in the industry where you ended up in Iron Mountain?
Wow, that's an interesting story. You know, I started off in technology all the way back in seventh grade with a Commodore 64, like pretty much everyone else in my age group, I think, and got intrigued by video games. And I remember the exact moment it started. Science class, homeroom teacher in seventh grade was showing me the game Frogger, and that he was able to start writing code to produce that game. And I knew in that moment, that was what I was meant to do. Weirdly, I never went on to produce a single video game, but I did do some text-based things in my Commodore 64, went through high school, spending every waking moment in the computer lab, made it to college through computer science, although I spent every minute I could doing rock and roll shows instead, but the education still had to happen. Moved up through State Street Bank, mainframe, client server, the distributed computing, went through financial services for 20 years, and then in the summer of 2014, actually, changed gears and came over to Iron Mountain based on a recommendation. And here I am in the information governance business 5 years later.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
So as this is part of our barbecue spectacular, the special episodes we're putting together for the end of season two, and knowing that you're a fellow barbecue aficionado, I wanted to ask you, how'd you get into barbecue? What made you want to start making it or trying harder at it?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, my mom was a pretty good cook, but not a great cook. And when she made ribs, they were not good. She made these on the grill. She never removed the silver skin. And I kept seeing TV shows and movies, and people were loving this food. And I was wondering what I was missing. So I decided in the back of my mind, someday I'm coming back to this topic. One day, wife was out of town. I was kind of bored going through Bass Pro Shops, and I saw the smoker section, and I decided I had to have one. I bought a smoker that day. I took it home, opened the internet to figure out what are you cooking these things, and started making some food. Made some ribs, tried a brisket, ruined it, but tried a whole bunch of different foods, and then little by little had to read more and more, tried some different wings. And it really turned my corner when I met you and you introduced me to the pit barrel. And I'll tell you, I haven't gone back to the electric smoker after starting with the pit barrel.
Yeah, the electric is a gateway for a lot of folks. My first two smokers were electric, but then once I made something with charcoal and wood and it had that smoke ring and it tasted like the stuff at the really good barbecue place, I was like, oh yeah, this is the way to go.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. And my wife, of course, made a lot of fun of me because I spent my whole life championing propane and not using charcoal. And now here I am, completely going the other direction. And she would eat crackers every day if she could. And here I am now expanding into multi-day cooking. And it opens me up for some criticism. But it's been a lot of fun and I like the focus.
My wife has had to endure a large number of my hobbies over the years. There was poker and golf, and I got into barbecue, and at least this one, A, keeps me around the house, and B, has delicious byproducts.
Right.
And my wife came to appreciate what a really good smoked brisket is, or some burnt ends, or something like that. And she's like, all right, this one's okay.
I think what got me out of the doghouse was really the first time I put down a plate of restaurant quality ribs. And it's something that she's always appreciated, she's never been able to make. And now I can produce them pretty reliably, especially following a few of the tips that you've shared with me over the time.
Yep. And I'm actually thinking about producing a companion video where I go through a slide deck I created years ago for Crisetti's, their butcher shop that sponsored our barbecue team. I did graduate level ribs course. And I talk about safety and meat selection and smoke and everything I've learned over hundreds and hundreds of hours and hundreds of ribs, hundreds and hundreds of racks at this point that I've made. And think about putting about a companion video where I kind of walk through that deck and link to it from the show so that if people want to know how did we make the ribs that won us competitions 3 years in a row, they'll have everything in there.
I bet that would be pretty helpful to a lot of people.
Now, do you use technology at all? The pit barrel, for folks that don't know, is fairly simple draft system, drum style cooker that you basically put burning charcoal in the bottom of it. Adding wood is really optional. And they've kind of designed this 33-gallon barrel to draw just enough oxygen through it and burn at just the right temperature that it'll keep steady for hours on end. Do you do any thermometers or anything else to kind of keep things in line?
Yeah, you know, the choice of technology or keeping it simple seems to be a constant debate. Every time I open it, I have this discussion with myself on how much more technology I should be applying, because pretty much that's how I roll. You read the Pit Barrel books and website, and they seem to be extremely proud of the simplicity of it, the set and forget technique, but I'll tell you, that's never really settled well with me, because I'm a glutton for information. So I do at least right now have couple of thermometers. I put one in there to measure the environment, have a meat probe, and then that's broadcasting over to another handheld unit. Probably tried 4 or 5 different ones of those, including apps for the phone and whatnot. I've gone all the way back to a real simple one, you know, a real simple thermometer with a digital read on it. So at least I know what's going on. And it's got me out of a couple problem spots, either when it got real hot or got real cold. So I definitely got that. I've looked into the automatic air regulation system where it will blow more air when it's needed. I had that in my shopping cart probably 10 times, and I've walked away feeling like somehow I'm doing something wrong with that and that the founders would not be appreciative. So I haven't done that part yet. I'm still using just the basic airflow opening control, but I found the thermometers to be a pretty good place to be.
An environment thermometer is good. I have a real simple one, like a Telltrue dial thermometer that I just drilled a hole in the pit barrel and mounted on the side of it. Downside of that is now you got a big 2-inch stem that gets in the way when you're trying to put the grates in and out of it. If you're using the grates, not as much of a big deal if you're using the hook and hang. But I've actually experimented with using a draft system on the pit barrel. I can report to you what happens. It does work. They make a little plate and it has a 1-inch valve pipe coming out of it. You stick that inside the pit barrel, and then you have your draft fan outside it plugged into that 1-inch pipe, and it just kind of hangs off there. And I use some little clips to keep it in place. And then you can stick a probe in through one of the rebar holes, and it will keep it within 5 degrees. But I found it to be kind of overkill, and I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to bother to hook up the draft system, I'm going to use a stump smoker. And, you know, cook like 30 racks of ribs, not 3 or 4. So I've kind of decided the pit barrels for, I want to be quick, I want to be lightweight, and I want easy cleanup and not have to haul all the gear. And I'll use the stumps for like overnight cooks or things that I really want to be hands-off with or that are going to take a long time or extremely large volumes.
Well, that makes me feel better, actually, that I haven't gone too far with it, because it is the balance of fast and simple. And I'm not typically cooking for a large crowd, so the pit barrel's a pretty good size for me.
My technical trick for heating up stuff in the pit barrel is I take a piece of aluminum foil and fold it over 7 or 8 times, and I put that on the rim, and then I close it. And that leaves it just enough ajar where it'll be slowly climbing in the temperature. And I just keep an eye on the temp and then yank that thing out when it gets where I want it. And it generally hangs around unless you have a ton of stuff dripping off the meat, like a ton of fat or something like that, trying to drown the fire.
Yeah. That was the one problem I had with it ever. So I brought this pit barrel to Boy Scout camp and became the darling of the place real fast. A couple hundred people there. But this, quote, portable smoker became quite noticeable, and we were carrying it around to different places, and pretty much everyone was talking about it. Well, I decided I was going to make these pork tacos that had quite a lot of sauce on them, and they dripped so much it ended up putting out my fire. But I didn't know that until it was way too late. No matter what I was doing, I couldn't get the temperature to stay up. So the thermometers helped me be aware of that problem, but it ended up taking me kind of a while to get the food turned out.
Underserved is brought to you by Syrix, the developer-founded, developer-run software consulting company. Do your kids want to see you at more of their soccer games? Does your daughter want you to come to her dance recital? Does your son want you to help him with his homework, then maybe watch a show together? Of course they do. But it's getting harder and harder for you to have family time because you have to put in so many hours at the office to get your mountain of software projects completed and out the door. And you can't hire people fast enough in such a tight job market to help you catch up. If this is you, then it's time to call Syrinx. We have consultants who can slot into your team immediately to make a positive impact on your schedule. We help you ship software on time and on budget. And we help you get back time to do the important things in life, like having a life. Let us get started today. You could reach us at 888-579-7469, option 1. That number again is 888-579-7469, option 1. Or you can email us at info@syrinx.com. That is info@syrinx.com. More time with your family, brought to you by Syrinx. Our next guest is Carlo Crisetti, owner of Crisetti's Butcher Shop and South Shore Meats. Carlo is the reigning king for many generations of butchers in his family. In his retail shop, he provides raw and pre-marinated meats for grilling, delicious deli sides by the pound, steaks, roasts, and of course, barbecue cuts like pork shoulder, brisket, ribs, and chicken. Carlo developed a love of making barbecue himself and has seen a growing segment of his customers looking to smoke something new every weekend. Let's dive in. Carlo, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So could you tell us a bit about what you're up to in, well, I guess both the businesses these days?
Well, what I'm up to and what I'm really not into. My business is wholesale and retail, all foods on the food service side when I say wholesale. And obviously food service is dead right now because all the restaurants are shut down. I have a skeletal crew there right now, and what they're working on are things to assist my retail business and my retail store. And most of that is marinated products, marinated steak dips, marinated chicken tenders, marinated chicken breasts, marinated chicken thighs, all different things to have packages so customers come in the store and they grab and go. And that's the whole idea of it, because with the mass people of coming in these days, hoarding up and stocking up for the apocalypse, they'll grab anything they can to grill up. Because what are they doing at home? They're grilling, eating, drinking. That's about it. And they can't go to a restaurant, so.
Yeah, my favorite Crisetti's grab and grill is the Asian fusion steak tips. Those things are so damn good.
Thank you. We go through a lot of those. In fact, we have to make those at my other facility to keep up with demand in the store.
It's impossible. I'm sure. So now you guys carry stuff for both grilling and for barbecue.
Correct.
And then you got into barbecue yourself. How did that happen?
Well, I love ribs. And to say I'm a food addict would be an understatement. But I'm always trying to make ribs. It's a quest to get better every time. And I was at my brother's house at a pool party one time, and I had ribs and smoked jalapeno peppers wrapped in bacon. And I fell in love, and I asked my friend, what did you do? Oh, we bought Traeger. It's a pellet-driven smoker. And I'm like, oh. That week, I went out and found a store, and I found one. I brought it home, bought the pellets, and that's how I started with the electric pellet-driven smoker.
A lot of people's gateway drug is the electric smoker or the pellet smoker. It's nice and easy to get started. And what are you using these days?
Well, I had a problem where I bought a Traeger and it has electrical components inside. The next summer, something happened to it. So I just bought another one and gave the other one to my friend because I didn't have the time or the know-how to fix it. I tried. I did it for a while and then parts started breaking. I was really frustrated. I got these wires. I took it all apart. And then one day, it was a warm day in May, and I grabbed it and I threw it off my deck in a temper tantrum. And I went down to a fireplace store because I was doing some research online on Instagram and learning more about smoking. And, you know, because when you're into something, you want to learn more. And I looked at the ceramics. And I ended up walking into a fireplace store that had different ceramic grills in there. And I walked in. I said, okay, this is what I want. I don't want new. I want something that has dents and scratches, a demo. And they're like, you're in luck. We used that one over there once. And it was a Primo, the Primo XL, you know, the old black ones. And I said, perfect, I'll take it. And I was like the easiest sale. I walked in, they saw me, they saw money symbols. I bought it, they brought it the other day, and I started cooking on those. And I got better. It's a whole new way of cooking too, because the ceramic holds in the heat. So it's a lot different than the Traeger. So I'm in a quest to do different things and get better at it. And then I upgraded from there, actually. I became a dealer. More and more people every year, I see it. It's huge. They come in looking for pork butts, briskets, ribs, and they walk in the store. They're like, okay, what am I smoking this week? I see it all the time. In fact, I do it myself. I did it myself yesterday. And lo and behold, I found this other company that I really liked a lot, and that was from Kamado Joe. And I said, you know what? I'll bring these Kamado Joes in because if I want to feed the clientele coming in and I want to have a really unique high-end smoker, I'm not in the grill business, but I want to cater to that crowd. And the rep me goes, oh, you know, you're going to want one of these. I'm like, I just bought a Primo XL. I am perfectly good at home. I have a house in the Cape and I actually built a whole outdoor area. I have a DCS grill in that Primo. I bought another one. I liked it so much. And I cut the stone around it and everything. So it's oval. He goes, you're going to want one of these. I'm like, no, I'm not. Well, I got a demo and I started cooking at the store doing different things and I really liked it a lot. So I gave my Primo at home away to a good friend of mine and I got one of these big demos, the big Kamado Joes, and that's my favorite one so far. I'm very happy with it.
Now, we met through Paul Rocha, a friend of ours,
right,
we were golfing with, but I think it turns out you were also in college with my cousin Damon.
Damon, yes, Max. I was just talking to him via text the other day. He's making jerky now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's having a jerky making contest with my other cousin, John.
Oh, is he?
And they're kind of doing it by mail since we're all at home. And I think I'm going to jump in and go at it with him.
You better jump in.
You must have a favorite method for making steaks. What do you have that you could share with our listeners so they can get better at it?
All right. When I'm grilling a steak, preferably, I like ribeyes because I like the fat. But wherever you get the steak from, take the steak out. I like to let it sit out for a couple minutes. I'll take it and I'll take paper towels and I'll dry up all the moisture around the steak. And then it doesn't matter what you have for oils, but I like to take out olive oil, give it a light coat of olive oil, rub it all around. And then whatever seasoning you have, lately I told you what I was using, the hippie pilgrim jalapeno salt, but very liberally salt it up. And then I'll have that grilled nice and hot every single time. And I don't know about you, Andrew, but when I'm grilling a steak, I'm always looking for the perfect grill mark. So I make sure the temp's perfect, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock in a different spot. And I'll do the same thing on the backside. It doesn't really matter. And then I'll take it off before I know it's ready. You know, it's probably like around 120. Put in a plate, bring it in the kitchen, put foil over it, whatever. Just let it sit for like 10 minutes. Money every time. When that rests, those juices, just like barbecue, they thicken up and they stay within there. You never cut into the steak.
All right. Thank you for sharing. Best steaks I've ever made are usually, I'll take like a nice thick ribeye. You got to get the salt on there early. I try and put it on, then throw it back in the fridge for at least an hour, maybe more. Not so long that it'll cure, but enough so that that salt gets a good chance to penetrate all the way through the meat. And then a little bit of rub on it, and then put it in the smoker.
What temp?
I'll run the smoker at like 250 and put some oak on there and then let the steak get up to like 130, 135 and then pull it off. Let it cool off for a tiny little bit while I'm heating up a ripping hot cast iron pan with some sort of oil in it that has a real high smoke point or ghee or something like that. And then just hurry up and flash fry the outside of it so you get a nice sear on that steak.
Yeah, reverse sear.
Yeah. I tried sous vide. And I just like the smoking approach better.
I do too. Sous vide's good for a lot of things, don't get me wrong. But I'm very kind of anal when I grill a steak. But that reverse sear method, have you tried that on a roast yet? Like a ribeye roast?
I have not.
I'll never cook a ribeye roast, a rib roast, any other way than reverse sear. Ever. Ever. When you do it that way, when you have it slow cooking, then you pull it out for like 30 minutes and then you sear that oven up, throw it in there and let it really cook around the outside and then let it sit again. You'll get that medium rare almost top to bottom every single time.
Yep.
Yeah, it's expensive too. So you want to take your time. Just do temperature, you know?
Now, we've been talking a lot about grilling and steaks. Didn't you invent and trademark a new steak?
I didn't invent a steak, but I did trademark one. What happened was a few years ago, I was watching TV. I'm flipping through the channels and I come across MSNBC, I believe. I don't even know. One of those news channels that do an expose, and they had the person that invented the flat iron steak. And he had a new steak. It was called the Vegas Strip. And I'm like, huh. So I stopped. I'm watching it. And I'm like, all right. I'm looking at it. Couldn't recognize what it was. So they had David Burke. I believe it was David Burke or one of his executive chefs on the show saying, oh, we use it in our steaks, on our menus, and it's excellent, and making it sound really high-end and fancy. Well, next week, I tried to get some of this product in. At the time, Creekstone Farms was the one fabricating it. And I called and I asked what it was, and they wouldn't tell me. And I said, what do you mean you won't tell me? It's a secret. It's a trademark. So no one knows what this steak is. So there's the mystery to that. So anyways, I thought that was kind of BS, but I got some of it anyway. I cooked it up. I tried it. I wasn't crazy about it. It was a little weird, a little texture-wise. I wasn't crazy about it. And I was thinking, wow, it's on David Burke Steakhouse, too. They're really kind of pushing hard. Well, it never really ended up turning out to be anything because it's not around really anymore. I don't see it around. But around that time, I'm going through Dick's Sporting Goods, trying to buy a golf hat. And I was upset because I'm going to spend $35 on a hat that pushes someone else's brand. So I thought, well, I should do the same thing. I should come out with my own brand. That way I'm promoting myself and it costs me less money to do that. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to create my own steak. And steak tips are huge in this region. It's funny.
People don't know what they are anywhere else.
They have no idea. You go into New York, upstate New York, go out west. They're like, what? They don't know what it is. Even Rhode Island. They're like, huh? They really don't know. And forget about out west. Well, out in Chicago, you have tenderloin medallions, which is the closest thing, which is bits and pieces off the tenderloin after the fillets are cut. But obviously, we sell a lot of those, different kind of marinades, hundreds of thousands of pounds of that product. But I always grew up eating pizzas of that flat meat. So what I do is I take an upper two-thirds choice and prime products. I go for the big stuff, nice thick stuff, and I cut a cross cut of the center of it. I cut it in a different way. And in that way, the muscle fibers go in a certain direction. So it's shaped almost like a rectangle. It's not exact. We're not cutting 2x4s, but relatively, it's shaped like a triangle. You grill it up like a regular strip steak and you cut it left to right, and the flavor blows you away. It's almost like tenderloin with a lot of flavor, right? But it has a little bit more of a bite. And I think a lot of people at the time, they used a steak tip. So this is more tender than a steak tip, but it's the same product. And it ain't really good. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to call this the Boston strip steak. Why does New York have one? Boston doesn't. We're the real city of champions, you know, until recently. We had a 20-year run. It's funny, all my friends in New York, they're like, Carlo, you had 20 years of talking crap, and now it's all over. How do you feel? I'm like, not good. Not good, you know? So anyways, that steak, I have it on menus. I trademarked it, and it's kind of cool is that I've had other major companies like Cisco. They've tried to copy it and go up against me on the wholesale end to other restaurants, and they try to take my business and whatnot, but they can't come close because they don't know how we're fabricating it. But it's a trademark of steak. It's kind of like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's kind of dumb, I think. But, you know, same token, Andrew, when I go to meet chefs, they're always asking me, what do you have that's new? What kind of new steaks out there? Well, like I told you earlier, unless you're going to crossbreed cattle with giraffe, you're not going to have a new muscle, right? What am I going to create that's new? We're talking about animals here.
So you came up with a new way of fabricating an existing animal so that you end up with a different chew and a different texture. And
absolutely. And it's fun. I'm actually a sponsor of the Patriots alumni, so I have a lot of them tied into it now, and it's a lot of fun. Eats great, and it's fun to show these restaurants this new steak, so they have something that's new, different, something they can put on their menu. And I'm making videos for them, too, also, that showcases my product, A, but B, their chefs and their restaurants, so I'm help promoting them. So when I go out into the arena, what am I doing for my customers? Well, I'm giving them more value for purchasing my product. There's less of a chance that they're going to kick me out for the competition. Because in this food service business, what have you done for me lately? It's tough, especially when I'm dealing with a distributor that's a middle person, then the restaurant. So it's all relationship building, but sometimes it's a barrier. So this has been a lot of fun. It's been a few years now, but it's doing very well.
You guys did another custom steak, too, where you wrap a fillet with the outside of a ribeye?
Yeah, well, last year, it's Valentine's Day weekend. My wife's like, bring home fillets, you're cooking for me. I'm like, all right. So I put a thing on a cut sheet at my facility. I said, hey, I need a couple 10-ounce center cut tenderloins, choice. And my guy saw it, and he said, my head cutter goes, why does Carlo want tenderloin? He goes, I'll show him a tenderloin. So what he did was he took the tenderloin, and then he wrapped it with the smallest dorsi, which for those of you that don't know, that's the outside part of the ribeye. That's the best tasting steak on the cattle right there. You can't beat that. That's what I go for when I go out to restaurants. But instead of bacon, I mean, you can wrap anything with bacon. Well, bacon's boring. Actually, bacon's not boring. I had bacon this morning. I love bacon. I'll wrap my bacon in bacon.
I apologize to bacon.
I apologize. I'm sorry. But this brings it next level. Andrew, I'll get you a couple to try. You're going to laugh. You're like, oh, my God. And then at the end of the day, when you take like a 6-8 ounce piece of tenderloin, you know, a fillet, you wrap that thing, you get like a 14-ounce fillet. And the flavor with all the fat that's in that muscle just soaks into the tenderloin. And my God, it's unbelievable. I have butcher twine. I'll wrap that up with that. And I trademarked that also. So I have a whole Boston family.
All right. It's 10:40 a.m. and I'm salivating now.
A couple foodies get together. You know what we're talking about.
My dad told me never to talk to strangers or to recruiters or to strange recruiters.
It's so exciting when the website gives zero information about the job I am applying for.
You take one 3-month sabbatical and all of a sudden, you're unhireable.
You're not allowed to say it, but you're looking for someone younger than me. Joke's on you, I'm 11 years old.
Finding your next consulting gig should not be this difficult. Quite frankly, you deserve better. Syrinx is the consulting company founded and run by software consultants. We get you. Find out why our employees are some of the happiest and best paid consultants in the industry at Syrinx.com. That's Syrinx.com. Find a better way today. Syrinx Consulting is a proud sponsor of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. Our third guest is Bill Gillespie. During the week, Bill is a mild-mannered electrical distribution designer for National Grid, helping them bring new residential and commercial customers online. Bill also helps out when storms cause damage to the electrical grid to get all the customers back online quickly. But on the weekends, Bill is a barbecue superman. He formed a barbecue team called Smokin' Hogs Barbecue that competes against all the top teams in the United States. Smokin' Hogs beat everyone, winning the Jack Daniel's World Championship in 2011, and then went on to win the American Royal in 2014. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
So you have the dual distinction of being involved in the tech industry for years and now providing its lifeblood, electricity, as well as cooking an awful lot of carcasses over open flames.
Yes.
So can you tell me a bit about what you do for National Grid?
Yeah. So I basically design any kind of distribution services from the substation to the house or to a commercial building. Anything distribution, I design it. It could be as simple as a new house service to a 100-lot development with underground transformers and stuff like that, laying them out and figuring out the voltages and all that good stuff.
And then you're also on the storm team, right?
Yeah. Part of the job is any kind of weather emergency or whatever, lose power, they call us in and we man the storm rooms. And part of my role is we dispatch the crews out to the different outages and whatnot. Fun stuff.
But then the real fun begins on the weekends where you have a competitive barbecue team that you've had for quite some time. How did you first get into barbecue?
I've always liked cooking. Started very young with the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, going on camping trips, learning to cook over a fire and cooking in the backyard with my dad growing up. We never had a propane grill. We always had a charcoal grill. And it wasn't until I got out of high school that we finally got our first propane grill. But at that point, I was so used to cooking over either wood or charcoal. I kind of missed that after we got the propane grill because it was so easy. And then we'd go camping in our 20s and whatnot. And I would do all the cooking over the open fire and stuff like that. And it just kind of progressed from there, really.
When did you form the team?
We formed the team in 2008. But I've been competing since 2005. A couple of guys I worked with were doing some backyard contests and asked me if I wanted to come along. And I was like, yeah, sure. So went to my first contest. It was the 4 standard categories, chicken, pork ribs, pork shoulder, and beef brisket. And there was a 5th category. It was called it anything but. So you can cook anything except for those 4 main categories. So at the time, I was messing around with salmon, cooking that on the grill in different ways. And I said, maybe I'll just do that. So I did it and got 4th place. And that kind of was like my hook right there. That dragged me right into it. And that was in 2005. And then 2008, we formed Smokin' Hogs.
And then who else is on the team with you?
My wife, Sean Gillespie, and one of my best friends, Alan Burke, who I've been friends with for like 35 years.
Now, I met you in an online forum and then in person at the Mohegan Sun competition years ago. I've seen you win an awful lot in person, but I saw on your website also that you won the Jack Daniel's in 2011 and the American Royal in 2014. Tell us about that.
So 2011, we got our first grand championship earlier in the year, and we went on to win 3 in a row, which was amazing. And the 3rd one that we won got us the invite to the Jack Daniel's 2011. So 3 weeks before that, we had went out to the American Royal. We figured, well, let's just do it. So we went out there, and it's an invitational and an open contest. So the first contest, there's like 150 teams. And then for the open, there's another probably 500 teams. And it's crazy. So we went out there. The first day, I think we got like a 10th place call and pork. And then the open, we got a 5th place call and brisket. And I'm like, wow, this is our first time really competing against the big dogs. Because at the time, we only had 3 grand championships. And we're competing against multiple world champions out there. And I'm like, wow, I can kind of hang with these guys.
The Myron Mixons, the Tuffy Stones.
Yeah. And I met Myron Mixon for the first time that weekend out there in 2011. So we come home, get all ready to go back out again in 3 weeks to go down to Lynchburg. And so we go down there. It's just amazing. So we just cook our program. And you just want to hear your name called. Because every contest that year, we had heard our name called at least once. So we were trying to keep the streak going. So we go through chicken, nothing. Go through ribs, nothing. And then we get a 9th place call in pork. I was beyond myself. Just like, wow, this is awesome. We got to call Jack, you know. So then nothing in brisket. And they're going over the overall. And there was a team that had, I think, like 2 second place calls. Totally expecting to hear them win. Well, they got 10th place overall. And they're going down the list. And they called Big Bob Gibson for reserve. And I'm thinking like, wow, who won this thing? And the MC goes to announce everything. And he goes, from Abington, Massachusetts. I look over at my wife. I look at my teammate, Al. And I'm like, wait a minute. We're from Abington. Holy crap. We just won the friggin' Jack. Absolutely amazing.
For folks that don't know, that is like winning the World Series.
Yeah, basically.
And the American Royals like winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And then 3 years later, we had an awesome year in 2014. We had 5 grand championships and 4 reserve grand championships. And I think we've got a 3rd place call in pork and a 3rd place call in brisket with a perfect score. And you know, a perfect score is a 180. And can you imagine getting a perfect score and finishing 3rd?
How does that happen?
Yeah. I thought it was between us and another team, and I thought they were going to win it. When they got to reserve, they didn't call either one of us. So I was like, oh, man, we tanked something. And then they called us for grand champion. And it was like, wow, I can't believe we just did this.
That is cool. What keeps you coming back? What do you love about cooking barbecue over salmon or steaks or whatever?
I love barbecue. Ribs are what got me into barbecue. I always loved ribs, and it's the challenge of trying to be at the top every time. And that's what drives me. Like if we go to a contest and finish, say, 20th out of 35 teams, that motivates me to do better the next time. Even if we get reserve, it still motivates me to come back and try to win the next event. We just did a chicken practice tonight. And even though with all this downtime, I'm still out there practicing and trying to get that next edge over the competition.
So for folks who aren't familiar, Bill most often competes in contests sanctioned by KCBS, the Kansas City Barbecue Society. They usually have a contest that lasts overnight on a weekend with the 4 categories he mentioned, chicken, pork ribs, pork shoulder, and brisket, turned in a half an hour apart each, starting at noon, usually on a Sunday. They're judged completely blind by certified barbecue judges, of which I am one. I've actually judged a competition that Bill was in down in Connecticut once. But you don't know whether or not you got Bill's food or whoever's. So you just get a number on a box when you're judging. And the judges rate everything on taste, tenderness, and appearance. And 9 is the highest score you can have in each. And Bill was saying he got a perfect score in brisket, which means everyone there, discarding the high and the low, were all 9s.
Yep.
Which is pretty much perfect barbecue. Pretty hard to attain.
It is. A perfect score of 180 is all 6 judges give you 999s across the board because they drop the lowest score. I haven't done that yet, but my wife has done it twice in dessert.
Wow.
So she always holds that over my head.
So how do you apply technology to cooking? What's your tech stack? What do you use for a smoker, a draft system, thermometers, and that stuff?
I cook on a Humphrey smoker. They're out of Maine, you know, American made. It's an insulated cabinet style smoker. So it has fireboxes on the bottom and the cooking chamber is on top of that. And it's a reverse flow. So the smoke and the heat come up through the sides, down through the top, and then out through the bottom and the back up the exhaust. So it's a whole reverse flow type action. And I use a Barbecue Guru control system. It's basically just a PLC, a fan, and a thermometer to monitor the pit. You can also monitor your food with it, but I don't. I use a fast-acting ThermoPen instant read thermometer, I guess you call it. And that's basically my entire tech stack.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Barbecue Guru as well. I have a stump smoker. It's a similar cabinet-style smoker.
Gravity fed, right? Those are good. I like
just let her burn all night with that draft system on. It'll keep it within 1 degree. So I'll let the brisket or pork shoulder run at 260 overnight. And you don't have to worry about it, which is nice. And there's also, you can connect to the Barbecue Guru through Wi-Fi. And then I either use a puck if I'm on the road or at home, I tunnel it through my firewall. And then I can check it from anywhere in the world by connecting back to my house.
I need to get a puck or something. I'm not quite that advanced yet. I'd like to do that, to get on the Wi-Fi with it. Every once in a while, if I'm at a contest, I'll get up in the middle of the night just to go look at it, make sure it's okay. But yeah, I definitely need to advance my technical stack.
I'll be happy to show you how.
Sounds good.
And when Bill is not traveling to competitions and not currently stuck at home, he also does a class where he teaches many of the secrets to being either a great competitive barbecuer or, as Myron Mixon likes to say, the king of the cul-de-sac.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We try to do maybe one or two classes a year, and it's a competition style class. So we go over everything that's in my competition program. So it's a 2-day class. First day is basically meat selection, what I look for. I prep everything. I show you what I do, tell you all my secrets, and then cook overnight. We basically just follow the Kansas City Barbecue Society timeline that I have. And all questions are answered. And I'm hoping that people that do take the class, I hope they get a lot out of it.
I definitely got a lot out of it, learned a few tricks that I never knew before that, and we improved our standings in 3 out of 4 categories in the next contest we were in.
Very nice. Good. That's good to hear.
I can personally endorse it, but I am not a paid endorser.
Yeah. That's
Now, Bill, you have 3 cookbooks out as well, right?
I do. Yeah. I have 3 cookbooks. The first one is Cooking on the Weber Smoky Mountain Cooker. All about how versatile it is. You can set it up like a grill. You can do low and slow, hot and fast, a combination of all that. And right now we have over 125,000 copies in print, which is pretty amazing. If you had told me that when I was in high school that I'd write books, I would have laughed at you. My second book is the Smoking Bacon and Hog Cookbook. It's everything from bacon to whole hog. And my third book is all on the Weber kettle. Secrets to grilling on the Weber kettle.
All right. And then you might be working on another one as well?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. We're contemplating the idea. Just trying to think of another topic. Something that can hopefully match the production of our first book would be nice.
Yeah. So for folks, if you've never seen one, the Weber Smoky Mountain or WSM, there's 2 popular models. I think there's an 18 and a 22-inch wide model. It's a bullet-style smoker. You can get them at Home Depot or Lowe's. And it's got a real low barrier to entry, but a real high ceiling as far as what you can do with it. There's a lot of competition teams that use WSMs like Harry Sue, your daddy. And you can hook a draft system up like the Barbecue Guru we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I won the Jack cooking on one of those. So I had at the time before Humphreys came along and started making cookers, I was cooking on a Backwoods Fat Boy and a WSM. And then in 2014, I cooked on 2 Humphreys, brand new, had never been used before, and fired it up and we won.
That's a way to break them in.
Right.
So where can folks find you on social media? I know you're on Facebook. Anywhere else?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's all at Smokin' Hogs BBQ on Twitter and Instagram. But basically the 3 big ones, I guess.
And that's SMOKINHOGGZ BBQ, right?
Correct. All right. Yep.
We hope you enjoyed getting to know our pitmasters and learning a little bit about what makes them tick. In the second part of this bonus episode, we will reveal their tips, tricks, and secrets to making better barbecue. We'll be releasing that episode shortly. You can find it on your favorite podcast client or on our website at underserved.fm. We'll talk to you then.